I'm just going to read the next 12 translations continuously. Then the whole stack of rice was mixed with so much yellowish and fragrant clarified butter that it began to overflow the leaf. There were a number of pots made of the bark of banana trees and the leaves of the kea plant. These pots were filled with various cooked vegetables and placed on all sides of the leaf. There were about 10 kinds of spinach, a soup called shukta, which was made with bitter neem leaves, a pungent preparation made with black pepper, and a mild cake made of fried curd, and buttermilk mixed with small fried pieces of dal. There were preparations of dugda tumbi, dugda kushmandi, veshara, lafra, mocha ghanta, mocha bhaja, and other vegetables. There were unlimited quantities of vridha, kushmanda badi, phulabadi, fruits, and various roots. Other preparations included eggplant mixed with newly grown neem leaves, fried together, light vadi, fried patola, and fried rounds of squash and pumpkin. There was a soup made with fried urit dal and mung dal, defeating nectar. There were also sweet chutney and five or six kinds of sour preparations, beginning with badamla. There were vadas made of mung dal, of urit dal, and of sweet bananas, and there were sweet rice cakes, coconut cakes, and various other cakes. And is anyone getting hungry yet? There were kanji bada, dugda chira, dugda laklaki, and various cakes that I am unable to describe. Sweet rice mixed with ghee was poured into an earthen pot and mixed with champakala and condensed milk and mango. Other preparations, including a very delicious churned curd and a variety of sandesh sweetmeats, indeed all the various eatables available in Bengal and Orissa, were prepared. Thus the Bhattacharya prepared a great variety of food and spread a fine cloth over a white wooden platform. On two sides of the stack of food were pitchers filled with scented cold water. The flowers of the tulsi tree were placed atop the mound of rice. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya also included several types of food that had been offered to Lord Jagannath. These included sweet balls known as Amrita Gutika, sweet rice and cakes. All these were kept separate, purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Although the remnants of food left by Jagannath were brought into the Bhattacharya's house, they were kept separate from the preparations he made at his home. It sometimes happens that prasadam is mixed with a larger quantity of food and then distributed. But in this case, we find that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya kept the Jagannath prasadam separate. He kept it aside particularly for the satisfaction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Let's recite Mangalacharan and get some blessings. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sapitam yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Svapdantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagna Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padhan Sahagna Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pramami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You know, whenever I read lists of prasadam and what Krishna is fed and his devotees are fed in Shastra, I feel like we're really missing out. this is a standard lunch. so many preparations. I think even if, what's the most people have? Like a 7-course banquet or a 10-course banquet? I don't think you get any more than that. I don't think we could digest it. you know why? Because maybe our hearts are not big enough. Whereas Krishna's heart is so big, he can consume anything the devotee offers him. So, you know, sometimes when we come across verses in Shastra which are descriptive of an event or even a list of things, one can wonder, okay, well, what do I speak about? When it comes to prasad, there's so many different things we can speak about. But I thought, let me just see what Prabhupada says about prasad and how he translates this word prasad. But because the minute we say prasadam, we think something to eat, right? Do you have some prasadam? Or if someone asks you, do you have prasad? You think about, oh, I've got to give them something to eat. But actually, if you look through how Prabhupada translates the word prasadam when it comes up as in verses, he gives a variety of different meanings, all pretty much facets of the same thing. He uses translations like, and actually, I don't think I've seen, at least not in what I researched, a translation of the word prasadam in a verse, whether it's CC or in Srimad Bhagavatam, translated directly as only pertaining to eatables. But the translations I've seen, he's translated prasadam as satisfaction, benediction, full of grace, blessings, and mercy. So, you know, and maybe you've noticed this pattern when you study something or when you're meditating on something or improving on something in the service of Krishna, you find that actually he sends that something to help you through lots of different channels. So actually over the last 10 days, we've had a couple of retreats and the theme of our retreat was the miracle of mercy. So it was interesting that prasadam is translated as mercy. When we think of this word mercy, and this is the thing with language, right? Language isn't just a way we communicate. Language is a way we codify and interpret the world around us. Yes, that's why in different languages, two things may sound like they are describing exactly the same object, but the actual word has a different impression on the mind. In some languages, the word for the sun sounds much more romantic and it has a romantic feel to it because of the way it's described. So when we look at the word mercy, if we are to take it just on colloquial and human, you know, social, secular standards, which is what our dictionary tends to be, right? They try to make the dictionary universal, which means don't include the universe, just include human beings. It's actually not that universal. But anyway, I'm not here to criticize the dictionary. I'm going to stop there. But if we look at mercy generally, you ask your regular person mercy, it may not mean something positive. We take it as something positive. When we hear the word mercy, we're like, wow, mercy is such a wonderful thing. But I remember in my childhood, there was a game called Mercy. You'd bend each other's fingers back and you'd beg for mercy. They said, mercy, 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 you know. Well, I think, let me go, okay, let me go. Whatever I've done. And also in battle, people when they say, please have mercy on me, they're saying, please let me go, forgive me. Whatever I've done, forgive me. And also, you know, don't punish me. You know, we usually ask for mercy. And this is what the dictionary says. We ask for mercy. Mercy is bestowed by someone who has more power than you and usually the power to punish you. Now, if you extend that to spiritual life, it makes God sound like this cruel, powerful personality who's just, you know, lording it over us based on his ability to punish. But this is not a very universal understanding. If we actually take the whole universe and beyond into consideration and go beyond just human parameters and human psychology in society, and we look at what divine mercy is, spiritual mercy is, then it actually has facets. Yes, the facet of forgiveness is there, Shama. This is Krishna's mercy upon us, right? This mercy is not just some random force like gravity. In fact, gravity is not even random. But this mercy comes from a person. Mercy is a personality in itself. It's an energy of Krishna, but this energy also has a personification. Mercy has facets. It has elements to it. And one is forgiveness, Shama. With Krishna's mercy, with divine mercy, comes the forgiveness, and it's implied and it's inherent in every aspect of mercy and every medium of mercy. Shama and forgiveness for what? Turning away. Not just turning away once, twice, but millions of times. Okay? But followed by that forgiveness. Followed by that forgiveness isn't just, I have the power to punish you and I'm going to withhold punishing you. No. Something far greater. There is anugraha, favor. Krishna gives us something. So he doesn't just say, okay, my kripa shakti, my mercy energy, my mercy shakti is going to just, I'll forget about what you did before. I will forgive it. I'll forgive it. I will not hold any resentment. I'm not looking to see you punished. In fact, I'm going to go one step further. I'm going to give you an opportunity to face me again and come closer. These verses of Shikshastakam, you know, that talk about prasadam, they come up quite a few times. And this pastime between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu along the lines of prasadam is going on. Or food as a medium for mercy, food as a medium for Krishna's forgiveness and his favor. The opportunity to face him again, the opportunity to come closer again, the opportunity to see him again. It's talked about throughout. Actually, not just in Madhya Leela, it's talked about throughout. But actually, earlier on, in Madhya chapter 6, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya actually quotes two verses from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And these are verses, if you read from verses 222 to 224, you'll come across these verses. But Srila Prabhupada, he summarizes the essence of those verses in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And he says, Lord Chaitanya then returned to his place, and the Bhattacharya sent Gopinath Acharya to him with various kinds of prasadam from the Jagannath temple. The next day, the Lord went to the temple of Jagannath early in the morning to attend Mangalarti. The priests in the temple brought him a garland from the deity and also offered him various kinds of prasadam. The Lord was very much pleased to receive them. And he at once went to the house of the Bhattacharya, taking the prasad and flower garland to present to him. Although it was early in the morning, the Bhattacharya understood that the Lord had come and was knocking on his door. He at once rose from his bed and began to say, Krishna, Krishna. This was heard by Lord Chaitanya. When the Bhattacharya opened the door, he saw the Lord standing there, and he was really pleased to see him early in the morning, receiving him with all care. The Bhattacharya offered him a nice seat, and both of them sat there. How would you receive a guest coming very early in the morning? This is love. Lord Chaitanya then offered him the prasadam he had received in the temple of Jagannath, and the Bhattacharya was very glad to receive this prasad from the hands of Lord Chaitanya himself. Indeed, without taking his bath and without performing his daily duties or even cleansing his teeth, he immediately began to eat the prasadam. In this way, he was freed from all material contamination and attachment. As the Bhattacharya began to eat the prasadam, he recited a verse from the Padma Purana. There it is stated that when prasadam is received, it must be eaten immediately, even if it has become very dry or old, or even if it is brought from a distant place, or even if one has not completed executing his daily duties. Since it is enjoined in the Shastras that prasadam should immediately be taken, there is no restriction of time, place, or atmosphere. The order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be followed. There are restrictions one must follow before accepting food from various people, but there are no restrictions on accepting prasadam from all kinds of people. Prasadam is always transcendental and can be taken under any condition. I know this reminds me of the holy name, Shikshastakam, in the second verse. We're told there's no hard and fast rules. So we're being told that actually the same way there are no hard and fast rules to chanting, it's such a strong process and medium for getting Krishna's forgiveness and mercy, that prasadam is the same. The prasad that we eat, this medium of food, something we do every single day, something you don't have to set aside time for. Okay, you don't have to say, oh, I have to get up, you know, 1.5 hours earlier or 2 hours earlier to chant my rounds. I have to get up earlier to be able to eat. We eat. Our body says eat. You know, there's a thing called appetite, right? It's we're compelled to do it. And yet in that, Krishna has instilled a way for us to connect with him, a way for us to deeply connect with him to a point where it removes all attachments and material desires. Do not take these words lightly. Srila Prabhupada doesn't say anything lightly in his books. Okay, this is not a suggestion. This is not a good idea. This is not just idealistic fantasy. This is an absolute fact. But it depends on a few things. Now, you know, bhakti, if we understand that mercy, all of his shaktis are independent, right? Just like him. And they're causeless. Causeless we normally understand to be, okay, what I'm getting is way out of proportion to what I'm putting in, yes? But causeless can also mean that there is no one input that leads to the same output. Okay, so Krishna keeps us very much engaged and tested like this by making sure we don't get comfortable thinking that, oh, if I do it like this, then I will attract Krishna's mercy. We may do it like that and attract Krishna's mercy once, twice, three times, maybe not the fourth time. And then he wants us to change it up. Why? Because this is variety. This is the essence of our relationship with Krishna, is there's always variety. So he keeps us engaged in this variety. But remembering that Bhakti Devi is independent and causeless, we also know that she exercises her independence. This mercy factor exercises her independence by living in the hearts of devotees. When Krishna says to the Ravasha Muni, I am in the heart of my devotees and they are in my heart. I know no one but them and they know no one but me. He means it. He means it. And he actually uses the word pure devotee. You know, he uses the word pure devotee. And there's different ways of measuring purity, purity of faith, and then ripeness of that purity, kanishtha, madhyam, and uttam. But to that degree, we are in his heart. To the degree we're in his heart, he is in our heart, and same. He is ours and we are his. But who gives this to us? There's so many mediums for this mercy. This mercy isn't about having a nice room in the temple. You know, this mercy isn't just about, you know, having good facilities for our service. This mercy is really about how much do the different mediums of mercy that we connect with, whether they are devotees, whether it's guru, whether it's the holy name, whether it's any of the nine processes of devotional service, or prasadam, how much do we connect with that mercy and allow ourselves to receive it? Okay, it's one thing accessing, it's one thing being given the opportunity, it is another thing actually taking it in. Now that verse, the description I just described with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya, where he didn't wait to, he didn't say, oh, give me a few minutes, let me go wash my mouth and have a shower. There's no material situation that can wait when we're really hungry. When we're really hungry. And it was this hunger that Lord Chaitanya was so pleased by. This hunger, this spontaneous attraction. My gosh, not only do I have the mercy of Krishna, an opportunity to have the mercy, it's Krishna himself is giving it to me. You know? So these carriers and mediums of mercy, Srila Prabhupada's given us a community where we are surrounded by mediums of mercy. We have no shortage. We have no shortage. Even if you are alone, with no books, with no beads, with no devotees, with no prasadam, okay? You still have the holy name. You still have all the memories, the impressions, the knowledge that's in the heart. Look how much Srila Prabhupada has given us. We are always connected to some medium or carrier of mercy. And Bhakti Devi is a servant of those carriers of mercy. See, whenever we connect with any medium of mercy, whether it's, again, whether it's the devotees, whether it's guru, whether it's the holy name, whether it's the nine processes or even prasadam, what are we doing? We're inviting, yes? When we make a love offering, we're inviting, aren't we? Please, please, Krishna, come closer. come, can you come near me? And he approaches. When you invite someone and they approach you, how long they stay very much depends on how we receive them, isn't it? If you've ever been to anyone's house, and you can immediately tell by the way they receive you whether they want you to stay or not. Yes, or whether they're too busy, right? And they need you to leave as soon as possible, but they'll engage in the niceties. When you greet someone in the temple or the street, Hare Krishna, Hare Bol, how are you? Hey, how are you doing? Whatever it is, how they receive your hello, right? When you say hello, that's an invitation, isn't it? Let's connect. Right? That's why we have greetings. Every language has a greeting. Let's connect. It's me telling you I want to connect. But the way they respond to us, they approach us, we approach them, but the way they respond to us and we respond back, there's a dynamic there. We're giving someone a very strong indication of whether we want them to stay. Right? I'm inviting you, but just stay for a little while. I'm inviting you, but just for a second. Just so I can feel good that I've said hello. I'm a friendly person. When we chant, are we like this? I want to feel good. I've chanted my rounds. No, am I paying attention to I've invited Krishna? How am I receiving him? Same with our prasadam, you know? So we see this with the chanting. We see this with prasadam. We see this with the deity. When we are... when we stop seeing our privilege as a privilege, when we stop recognizing its value, those opportunities stop looking like opportunities. Yes, they start to just become part of the furniture. And when something starts to become part of the furniture, I'll let you have a look at how you treat your furniture at home. Do you cover it in plastic? Do you spill things on it and never clean it? Do you never replace it? Do you kick it? What do you do with your furniture? So when we look at prasadam as a medium of mercy, it means going beyond looking at it as food. Yes? We are improving our culture as a community in terms of our nutritional approach to prasadam, right? We're looking after our health. Gone are the days when looking after your health was seen as maya. And if you still think like that, then you are the odd one out. You know, we're looking after our health much better in the service of Krishna. We're trying to be more careful in how the prasadam tastes. For the pleasure of Krishna. And we're certainly careful about it when it comes to our own taste. And we'll quote everything we possibly can from Srila Prabhupada, especially when he says prasadam is a matter of taste. We even use it to justify saying no to prasad or being selective, even with mahaprasad. Right? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was not selective about the mahaprasad. He just ate whatever he could, whatever Lord Chaitanya brought him, he just consumed it. And in that instant, Lord Chaitanya says he became a pure devotee. Instant. But really appreciating that prasadam is not just good for the body and the mind, just like any food is, okay? But it actually changes the body and the mind in a very different way. All food has the power to change the body and mind, right? As a nourisher, as a medicine, in so many different ways. The attitude with which you eat has a huge impact on whether something is toxic on you or whether it's healing, right? The attitude with which we eat, if we eat with guilt, you know, that what we're eating, even if it's well composed, it sits in the body in unwanted ways. Okay, it becomes toxic. When we eat with a healthy attitude, even if the materials that the food is made of is not so wonderful, still we eat it with, you know, it benefits the body in a wonderful way. Most disease starts in the subtle body. But prasadam transforms the body, transforms the subtle body, and it nourishes us, the jiva. Not just this body, not just our vehicle, but us. And it depends on a few things. It depends on the consciousness with which we cook it. Yes. Who cooks in a rush? Who's a fan of one-pot meals? Batch cooking, food prep. Why? Our lives have become so busy. So busy. We're not a movement that's lazy. Okay? No one in, you know, the Hare Krishna community can be called lazy. We're just not allowed to be lazy. Okay? But in trying to avoid being lazy, we become unconscious. When we're too busy, we become unconscious. Unconscious, being unconscious is not just a matter of being still in the body. Being unconscious is like we become disconnected with our motive. We lose our awareness, right? When we're very busy, we lose our awareness of why we're doing what we're doing. So the impact prasadam has on us is deeply connected with how we cook it. Right? Not just the preparation, but what we're thinking about when we cook. It's also deeply connected with how we offer it. Do you race through the mantras? Do you do the condensed version? Or are you actually thinking about feeding Krishna? Even though he needs nothing to eat, he's constantly craving to be fed by us. And last but not least, maybe we didn't prepare it. Maybe we didn't do the offering. But how are we honoring or receiving it? A quick break at lunchtime at the desk? Grab a quick bite on Sankirtan? Getting ready to distribute the next book? You know, maybe skipping a meal because you've got too much to do? This is Krishna's been invited. How are we receiving him? So our receiving of prasadam tongue deep? Is it stomach deep? Or is it soul deep? And you know, it is not, it doesn't take a long time. We have this fear that if I'm present, whether it's with our japa or our eating, this is going to take me longer to do. When we're in a rush, we are slowed down by our mind being scattered in so many places. You know, when our mind is scattered in so many places, our intelligence is scattered in so many places, our subtle body is not here. It's scattered in all those places, which makes us very inefficient with the task at hand. Okay? So, actually, to be conscious and to be present is much more effective, not just as a human being, but as a person who's trying to connect with Krishna. Because not only then do we harness the efficiency of the body and mind and Krishna's external energies, but we harness his mercy. His time. He is time. Just like Krishna becomes a servant of his devotee as the time factor, he becomes the protector of the devotee, the protector of devotion. And he's not going to make us do something when we are present for him that is going to push us away from him. He will always, as the time factor, when we use that time for him and are still for him when we give him time, he will protect us. In fact, everything we do after that has more potency. Physically, because we've eaten properly. Psychologically, because we've been present. Everybody's a fan of mindfulness and being present, right? And devotionally, we have more potency because that prasadam, what we eat, also has the same potency as the holy name. There's no hard or fast rules when it comes to prasad, as we've heard. You know, when we look at the Shikshastakam prayers, the first verse tells us seven opulences, okay, of the holy name. Those seven opulences are also there in prasad. What's the first sentence? Jeto darpana marjanam. What does that mean? Cleansing the heart, cleansing the mind of the accumulated dust, okay, the dust that's covering who we are. Dust, but when you have a dusty mirror, you can't see your prasadam does the same thing. Yes, what we eat every day has the same ability, depending on how it's cooked, how it's offered, and most of all, how it's honored. Most of all, how it's honored. Most of all, how we receive it. It has the same ability to cleanse the heart, to wake us up. Okay? To cleanse the heart, the dust accumulated over millions of births. It extinguishes the fire of material suffering. What is material suffering? Every single, and I'll tell you this as a psychiatrist, okay? Every single type of pain in this world is just an echo of our original pain. Because to be separated from someone who loves you unconditionally is the biggest trauma anyone can experience. Everything else is just an echo. To be separated from and turn away from the person who loves you most is the strongest grief reaction there is. Every other loss is just a reflection of that, just a shadow. So this fire of material existence is our heart telling us, even indirectly, reconnect, reconnect, reconnect. So as we chant, as we eat, okay, as we eat our way back to Godhead, it quite literally reduces our suffering. And then, you know, there's so many of the next few potencies of the holy name, which are also there in Prasadam. All of this, we see ourselves with a clean mirror. We see ourselves as not the body, or not just the body, not just the mind. We start to know ourselves. As we know ourselves, we start to understand our relationship with Krishna. We start to know Krishna. And then full bliss starts to blossom. Okay, so how are we inviting Krishna? Just like when we chant, we make preparations, right, to invite Krishna, to tell him I'm serious about chanting. I've made sure I've got enough rest. I've made sure I'm sitting in a sacred space. I've made sure I've cleared my mind. I've made sure I've controlled my breath. I've made sure I've got nothing to do. This is when we invite Krishna, when we invite him as his name, as the incarnation. He incarnates as the holy name in this age. We invite him. And then how do we show him that we receive him? By listening. Because he's coming as our guest, as our friend, as a sound vibration. How do you relate to sound vibration? You listen. How do you relate to prasad? How do we invite Krishna? We invite him in our preparation. The moment we enter the kitchen to start cooking, our invitation begins. Even if all you're making is a pot noodle. Okay? And that's not a joke. I know some of you survive on pot noodles. Okay, so if you start with making that devotional, then maybe you'll start cooking. Yes, he'll empower you. Even if you're just boiling the water, that's all you're doing. Start that invitation. This invitation, I'm going to make this for Krishna. We're going to eat together. We're going to eat together. And then when you're offering it, keep that meditation. If you can't meditate, if you're thinking about, just like when you're chanting, you know, we say go one mantra at a time. Don't worry about the mantra before and don't worry about the next mantra coming. Stay with the mantra. He's just here with you right now. Same with preparation. If you get distracted, oh, I'm running out of time. Oh, I've got to do this next. Oh, but I didn't do this very well 2 hours ago. Forget it. Come back. Come back. Come back. This is what attracts Krishna. Consistent endeavor. The endeavor to repeat the invitation with kindness. Yes? So when we do this, when we invite him, he approaches. He says, oh, I'm coming. I'm coming. You're making something for me. What are you making? What nice thing are you making? Can I see? He's already started eating it. When we start preparing it, he's already started enjoying it. You know, you think Krishna only enjoys Mother Yashoda's makkhan after she's made it? He's already relishing it before she's made it. Even when she's just in the kitchen boiling the milk and he smells the fragrant milk. You know, milk when it's boiling has this beautiful fragrance, caramel fragrance that fills the house. He's already enjoying it. He's experiencing the love through the medium of prasadam, food, right? He experiences our love. We experience his love. Mercy is not a one-way thing. He's waiting for our mercy. He's saying, when are you going to invite me? When are you going to feed me? When are you going to talk to me? So he approaches. He approaches. So what do we do? How do we receive him? We're still inviting when we're offering. But then if we sit down and then just inhale practically what we're eating, he's there. He's sitting. He's giving us his remnants. You know, that picture, that beautiful picture of Krishna sitting with the cowherd boys. No one's looking at their watch. All eyes are on him. Feeding him, showing him, look what I've got. Look what I made for you. You don't have to wait till you wake up and realize that maybe you have a rasa as a cowherd boy, or maybe you're a gopi who cooks for him. You don't have to wait for that. How kind is he just in these bodies, we can do the same things. Right? This body and this subtle body we've got is actually a manifestation of our aversion to Krishna, or the different forms we give it. But he's so kind. He says the very same thing you used as your getaway car, you can use to come back to me. Right? This is our getaway vehicle. But he says you can use it to come back to me. So what are we doing? Are we taking advantage of these opportunities? And don't worry about whether you can do this every day. Sometimes we get caught up in, I'm unworthy until it's unalloyed and unmotivated and uninterruptible. No, this is again, we're saying, no, my problem is bigger than Krishna's love. You think he's not going to appreciate it if you start with once a week? You'll move to twice a week. This is relationship. All relationships build step by step, every single one. Okay, even those people who say they're soulmates and as soon as they saw each other, they, you know, knew the other person was the one, or friends who say as soon as they, you know, saw each other, they hit it off. It takes work. It takes work to build on that, to grow it. And prema is just the beginning. So, and if you can't, if none of this appeals to you, you're still not bought into Krishna's mercy and prasadam, well, at least honor what you eat peacefully. Because, and being careful about who's cooked it, and being careful about how it's been prepared, and how you offer it, you know, because all of that has an impact on your mind. We carry what the cook is thinking of. We consume it when they cook. Whatever, so, you know, when we're going out to eat, not only do we not know the ingredients, we also don't know how it's been prepared, even if it's vegan, even if it's allium-free. Okay? Even if it's owned by devotees, okay? Still, remember, there's a commercialism to it. It always brings something. That brings an element, you know? So at least if we're not yet connecting with, I can see prasadam as food, as Krishna's mercy, at least just see it as something that strengthens your psychological, your physical, and your spiritual immune system. We are bombarded with so many different things. We are constantly being attacked by, and it is an attack because we're surrounded by it, by toxins, okay? They're everywhere, even on the things we're sitting on and the clothes that we wear. It's in the air. We're breathing it in. Pathogens, okay, other entities that are looking to get in and make a house inside of us, you know, and causing diseases along the way. Okay, other people's thoughts and attitudes, even if they're not directed towards us, they're there. Yes? There's biological weaponry and then there's psychological weaponry. So, but prasadam protects us. We can all do better. Yes, we can all do better with our nutrition, but we can do even better with prasad. You don't have to find extra time to add it in. What you're already doing, think about it. What you're already cooking, change the consciousness. How you're offering, change it a little bit. See what your next best, easy step to introduce is for you. For you, what's practical? Because you take one step towards him, he will come closer. Okay? So these small steps, they're like, they show Krishna that we are trying to become steady. Because it's only when we get steady that we can then move on to being engaged in uninterrupted devotional service, okay? So every steadiness in anything means stops and starts. It means falling down. When you learn to cycle, you do it in stops and starts. You fall off the bike. When you learn to walk, you do it in stops and starts. You might only take one step, fall down. Then it's three steps, then five. Before you know it, you're walking miles, right? So be fearless in your endeavor to become fixed. Be fearless in becoming steady. Don't be scared of making mistakes. Don't be scared of taking a step back. You know, what does mercy mean? Mercy also means help. During Karthik, we're getting 100 times minimum the help that Krishna would normally give. Okay, it's in response to our endeavor in cooking, our endeavor in offering, our endeavor in honoring. But we're dealing with a person here who really is only satisfied, not by technique, but by love. So our endeavor to be consistent is an expression of our love. When Mother Yashoda was trying to tie Krishna, see them there, she was expressing her love as a mother, her love as a mother that I don't want my child to come under any more harm. He's climbing high up these pots and, you know, he could get hurt. I don't want him to come to harm and grow up to be a rascal who thinks it's okay to steal and make a mess. Right? These are very appropriate loving sentiments for a mother. It's really sweet. It describes how actually the gopis in the neighboring houses started laughing at this whole incident of how Madhisha is trying to tie Krishna. Right? She has like 150 meters of rope and she can't tie it around this tiny little, you know, toddler's belly who's like, his big, big lotus eyes are filled with little tears. He's like thinking, what's she doing? But he's stubborn, you know, toddlers are stubborn and Krishna's the most stubborn. He's like, no, but I want to play. I want to play and I want to steal butter and I want to give it to my friends and the monkeys. You know, his ichha, his desire is strong and his opulence is big, his Aishwarya Shakti. His ichha shakti, his opulent shakti, they work together, right? And so like, yes, so even the ropes, they won't close. Okay, so these gopis, they're laughing. Even she laughs. She laughs because she loves him. She's not doing it because she hates him. She's not doing it because she wants to punish him, like in a cruel manner. She's laughing because she's thinking, this is just such sweetness. This is such sweetness. She's humble. She's humble and Krishna's watching her, you know, as she's trying harder and harder to tie 150 meters of rope around one tiny belly. She's starting to sweat. Her hair's coming loose. Flowers are falling from her hair. Her sari's falling loose. There's no stainless steel pins from, you know, venisons. You know, she's tied naturally. So it's coming loose. And he's seeing she's trying and not giving up. She's tried harder. She's not giving up. And what happens? He's so pleased. There reaches a crescendo. The devotee's expression of love, our endeavor reaches a crescendo where Krishna says, you have invited me so nicely. You have received me consistently so nicely. You've tried so hard. I'm coming and I'm staying. So the first finger, the two-finger gap, the first finger is our endeavor. The second finger is when Kripa Shakti overtakes Krishna, all other Shaktis are kicked out. They will leave. Aishwarya Shakti says, I'm out of here. Right? His power says, I'm out of here. Because Krishna's your servant. His desire leaves. Why? Because the desire of the devotee has won over him. So when we love Krishna, when we give him our love offerings in such a way, you know, just like Sudama, he captured Krishna with dry chipped rice. A bomb, if you've ever cooked and you get to the bottom of the bag of rice, the rice is just little granules, right? So what is this? Krishna's steadiness is always there. Svanishtha, right? He's always steady. Our steadiness is, we're trying to attain it. But when we get that steadiness, then we get really a lot of mercy. And this is across so many different areas of our life. The gap closes. There is a connection of love, you know? So whether you're offering him just a little bit of chipped dry rice, maybe offering just one grain of rice, like Draupadi did from the bottom of her pot. She gave it to him with all love, all surrender. Or you're offering him multitudes of pots of butter, yogurt, milk. Or maybe what you're offering is so delicious, he doesn't even wait for you to offer it. He just comes and steals it like he does with the butter of the gopis. Whatever it is, whatever you're able to offer. You know, this is also, I'm inviting myself to this. This is me talking to myself that this Karthik, something, one shift with the preparation, one shift with the offering, and one shift with the honoring. That one shift is one step closer. Don't get caught up in the waves of common societal thinking, even within our society. Okay? Because even within our community, there are also some unhealthy norms, like rushing, like doing too much and never saying no. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your corrections, your comments, but just to close on, there's a really nice short video. I don't think we have time to watch it. It's literally 60 seconds, those Prabhupada, you know, little clips that come. I love starting my morning with just hearing that's the first thing I hear. And there's one which is really, really, really sweet. And Srila Prabhupada's talking about offering. And he chokes up during this video. And he says, you know, we should be really begging in our invitation. Please come and take. But he says, be very careful, because we're dealing with a person here. So be careful with all people, because how we are with other people reflects how we are with Krishna. So over to you, Hare Krishna.
Hi, Paul. Thank you so much for your class. So, thank you for really enlightening us on like the quality of prasadam, with it being transcendental, easily accessible, extinguishing fire of material suffering, etc. And then, towards the end, you spoke about like societal norms and the things we do culturally. So I was thinking, why is there such a big distinction in how we treat Mahaprasadam and prasadam? Mm. If all prasadam has these qualities, why is there such a big difference?
Because we're not that transcendental. That's the bottom line. Prabhupada treated Mahaprasad the same way he treated his daily meals. You know, when you listen to his disciples' descriptions of his cooking, his offering, and his honoring, he was very attentive, and he was very grateful, and he was very present. It didn't matter if he was making a feast of 20 preparations for 100 devotees, or whether he was just cooking for him and his personal servant. He had a gravitas rooted in deep love. So why do we treat them separately? Because there are certain principles and regulations that become a skeleton and a framework for us to do the right thing. And we seem to, as human beings, need hierarchies. Mm. Otherwise, we don't know what to do, because we're not driven by love straight away. We're, you know, from Shraddha to Nishtha, one's goal is to become steady. Then from Nishtha to Ashakti, one wants to be compelled by love. That's what they're trying to develop. And then after, you know, Bhav and Prem, you are compelled by love. You do those same things. So Prabhupada was doing everything compelled by love. But he also knew that, and Krishna knows that, if when you're trying to get to know me, you need some framework. So in our community, we have a framework in terms of, yes, with Mahaprasadam, the way it's, you know, cooked for the deities has to be Brahmins cooking, offering, you know, and then when we honor it, we see it as extra special, just like in this verse. Jagannath's Mahaprasadam was put separate to everything that Sarva Mahabhat Bhattacharya cooked. Many reasons for this. But one point that really stands out, and it's the last line of the purport, is, and it highlights that actually for Lord Chaitanya, because Jagannath was like his Ishtadev, that Prasadam had a special potency in being a medium of mercy. He saw that even more as, oh, I can really connect with Jagannath. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. I had a follow-up on that. Well, actually, it's a different question. But if it is so powerful and has so many potencies, then why is like fasting also such a big part of our culture?
That's a really good question. Sometimes withholding is also an offering. This is austerity, voluntary austerity. So like we use our time to chant instead of doing other things. There's an austerity there. We've said no to something else to chant instead, right? So when we fast, and especially fasting that is prescribed by Krishna, you know, people fast who are not devotional or not even theistic at all. People fast for, you know, to look young. People fast for to manage their blood sugar. People fast for so many things, reasons, right? There's so many different fasts out there. But when we fast, when we engage in the austerity of refraining from perhaps for some period of time not receiving his mercy through the medium of, you know, cooked eatables or something to eat, what we're doing instead, and this is the idea, is that we are connecting with a different medium, right? Prabhupada would say, if you're going to fast, this means that's more time for chanting or reading. But if you have a full day of service, physical service, then you need to consider how you're going to fast. Yes, so different things for different people. So this is the amazing potency of the inclusivity of Krishna and the inclusivity of the Siddhanta of Vaishnavism and Sanatana Dharma, is that everything can be a medium or it can also be a blockade. Your fasting can be a block, right? Prasadam can be a block. We can make offenses with prasad just like with the holy name. When we don't honor prasad properly, we make offenses. You know, we talk about inattentive chanting, there's also the reactions from inattentive eating. You know, at the very least, the offense we're making is we're missing an opportunity. Even, you know, it can start really simple. People's living, the culture around living together has changed a lot, right? We don't have the standard you live with your parents until a certain age, and then you get married and have children, and you live with your family, and then you take vanaprasth and sannyas, and some people take sannyas. We don't have it sequential. We don't have it, even what our families look like, what our paramachari ashram looks like, vanaprasth looks like, it all looks different. We've got periods of our life where we're living with peers, as friends, you know? Some people live in houses where it's mixed genders. Doesn't matter. What you can do is, at the very least, we could say, okay, on a Sunday, all together we'll just cook for Krishna. This will be our one of our six loving exchanges. Maybe that's all you can introduce. Maybe you can only introduce once a month. And we're going to sit and we're going to honor together and we're going to be mindful about what we talk about. We're going to be mindful about what we listen to, you know. And in this way, we are connecting in a deeper way. So one, there's no cultural block, and there's no one principle which is a block or the only way to connect. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
I know this, we've been spending 1 hour talking about prasadam, so you might be hungry. I'm happy to take more questions, but those of you who want to go to breakfast, you're more than welcome to. Kushal, did you want to ask something? Okay. I thought you put your hand up. Yes, Prabhu.
I had a question about the advice by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about how we should not enjoy opulent prasadam. And I guess in general also, like when we are honoring prasadam, the meditation, that we are not trying to enjoy this, but rather accept it as Krishna's mercy. So more practical tips on a day-to-day basis when we are honoring prasadam, how we should meditate, how we should eat.
See, enjoyment is natural. Prasadam is tasty, you're going to enjoy it. When Lord Chaitanya talks about this enjoyment separate from Krishna. So where our meditation is, and this is common, I'm going to cook according to my taste. Now, those of you who cook, if you're the main cook in your household, sometimes you have to cook 2-3 different meals because the kids eat different from the parents, who eat different from the grandparents, or, you know, so many different things, or this devotee eats this, another devotee eats another thing. you're being driven very much by people's taste buds. There's an enjoyment there. You may cook in the mood of service, but even in that kind of setup, you can stop and think, okay, is there one preparation I can make specifically for Krishna? You know, CC tells us so many dishes that Lord Chaitanya personally liked. If you have Gauranitha, you can pick something like that. Maybe not every day you can do it, but once a week you make something just for them, for Gauranitha. Maybe if you have Radha Krishna deities, you look at what they like to eat. So we can do this. We can also, you know, at the very least, just simply when you're not thinking about just your own enjoyment, maybe you don't like fruit, but Krishna loves fruit. Do a fruit offering daily. It requires very little preparation. And you honor that as the prasad. You will learn and experience it as a different, you know, in a very different way to just eating fruit because you should. Right? See, the more we get used to high quality prasad, the more refined our consciousness becomes, and you start to lose taste for mundane cooking. One's consciousness can become so refined that actually you start to become disturbed, even if somebody who's a devotee hasn't cooked properly, you know, with the right consciousness. And one starts to become very careful, even with their own cooking. You know, I hope you don't mind me. I'm just going to share a very quick pastime, like something that I experienced. Not pastime, story. Well, the pastime is just an English word, you know, in one sense. I learned very early on in my devotional life the impact, this is Krishna's kindness, the impact of the consciousness of cooking. So It's only happened once by Krishna's kindness. It was the first and last time I had an argument with someone while I was cooking. And I was cooking and I was like, we need to stop arguing. This is not the right time to have a discussion about this silly thing. It was such a, I couldn't even remember what it was about. And, but it was there. It went into what I was cooking, the preparations. I made Krishna's plate. And at this time I was a very young devotee, so I just had Gauranithai. So they don't accept offenses, but they still teach you. And I still remember I made the plate and I was walking out the kitchen. And this was a light plate. I'm not feeble. You know, I definitely wasn't feeble and weak then. I'm carrying the plate. And honestly, this is no joke. I remember it as if it was 2 minutes ago. I felt something hit my hand. And my hand flicked like this. The plate span around and the entire thing landed right in the bin. Yes, landed right in the bin. It was one of those, you know, the swing top bins. So it wasn't just an open, big, you know, barrel. It was like a swing top bin. It spun around. Look, nothing fell on the floor. Not a drop of dal came out of the bowl. Okay, not even a bit of sabji. Okay, it fell off the plate. The chapati didn't fall off. Gravity went on Krishna's side. And I saw it spun around and it went, swung that lid open like this and fell inside. Okay. I was like, I'm cooking all over again. And I started from scratch. Okay, so, I'm sharing that. He sees, he experiences. And he can, like a little toddler, say, I'm not eating it. Don't even bring it here. I don't like that. What have you put in there? So this enjoyment, I says, one should not enjoy opulent prasad, not separately from Krishna. But when we cook for Krishna, then even the simplest thing becomes very enjoyable and very opulent. Yeah? Okay. Any ladies have anything you want to say? You have so many ladies. I mean, not being sexist here, if you have cooking pastimes, please share. But any ladies? You know, ladies, anybody want to? Anything? No? Okay. So that brings us to a natural end. Thank you so much for your association. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Radha Gokul Nanda ki jai.